All of the Fretboard Journal podcasts are brought to you by a few presenting sponsors. First up is Marden Guitars. Marden Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Then we have Carter Vintage Guitars over in Nashville, where guitar lovers go for a good time. And we have a brand new presenting sponsor, Calton Cases. Your custom instrument deserves a custom case. Thank you to all of our presenting sponsors. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the founder and editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that's John Rauhaus playing in the background. Every week on this show, I try to interview someone interesting from the world of fretted instruments. We've been doing this for 10 years now. We've been doing the print magazine for 15 years. And we've interviewed amazing world-class musicians, luthiers, historians, authors, and photographers. And they've all had one constant, which is they love fretted instruments and they want to talk about them. And today on the podcast, I'm breaking that streak. I'm talking to a drummer. But it's not just any drummer. It's Joaquim Cooter, son of Ry Cooter. Joaquim is the amazing percussionist, drummer, singer-songwriter. He was on the Buena Vista Social Club project. He was in the movie. He has done so much cool stuff over the years, and he just put out a record on Nonesuch Records, his debut Nonesuch record called Over That Road I'm Bound. And even though he's not a fretted instrumentalist, I reached out to him to get his story, to get him on this podcast, because it's such a cool album. Over That Road I'm Bound is a collection of Uncle Dave Macon songs performed by Joaquim on the electric mbira, which is basically the African thumb piano adapted, God knows how, to play electric. Ry is on this record. Some great instrumentalists are on this record. And the songs are Uncle Dave Macon songs. Uncle Dave Macon, for those of you who don't know, legendary pivotal figure in the world of banjo history, bridged the worlds of vaudeville and minstrel shows to the modern country era, was in the Grand Ole Opry before he died, sort of a kooky, larger-than-life figure, kind of a comical figure, one of the great banjo comedians, a tradition that exists to this day. And Joaquim put out this record, Over That Road I'm Bound, and I played it. And it's one of those records that your kid will enjoy and your 80-year-old curmudgeon 78 collecting grandfather will enjoy. It is an amazing, sort of timeless sounding, beautifully produced collection of these songs. And I wanted to hear all about it, which is why I'm talking to Joaquim. We, of course, talk about growing up as Ry Cooter's son and gear and all that other stuff. But it's a cool chat, and it's an amazing record. I hope everybody out there will go check it out. Before we get to it, we have a couple of sponsors that I want to tell you about. Mono Cases. You can go to monocreators.com to see their entire lineup of gig bags, studio monitor stands, pedal boards, pedal board bags, you name it. Everything they do is so well built, so perfectly executed, just no mistakes, no weird quirks, and it's all very ergonomic, so it's not going to break your back or your bank. Check out monocreators.com to see everything that they offer. We also are sponsored by our friends over in the Great White North at Folkway Music. If you care at all about vintage Martins and Gibsons, which I know a lot of you do, you definitely need to be following Folkway Music's Mark Stutman over on Instagram. He is such an authority. He is so open with his information. And the store's inventory, I know they're in Canada, but he's got the coolest selection of both new and old acoustics around. So go check out Folkway Music if you haven't yet. Tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. And we do have a couple of other podcasts I should tell you about. We've got the Luthier on Luthier podcast, where Michael Bashkin interviews some of his peers once a month. I love that show. I always learn something from it. And of course, we've got our Truth About Vintage Amps podcast, which I co-host along with amp tech Skip Simmons, where we field all of your questions about all things tube amplifier and cooking and books and movies. And it is a lot of fun. It's basically car talk for vintage gear lovers. So go check that out as well if you haven't yet. We're up to 57 episodes of that podcast. I can't believe it. Fretboard Journal is going to have a ton of surprises on its website between now and January. So please check it out regularly. Like I said, subscribe if you haven't yet. We're a little indie magazine and could use all the support we can get. But we are going through all of our hard drives and uncovering all sorts of videos and things that we've never put out before. So you're going to want to check out our website. Without further ado, here's my chat with Joaquim Cooter. The record, of course, is called Over That Road I'm Bound, and I encourage you to all go check it out. Joaquim, you are sort of the token non-fretted instrument player I think I've ever spoken to, but you are qualified, so we're making an exception.
I know, I feel like this is a big, you know, I should have some kind of like special... You know, when you like get a degree from a college that you didn't go to or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. It's an honorary doctorate in fretboardology. Yeah. Because you put out this amazing record, Uncle Dave Makin' Song. So, A, we would have let you in because of that anyways. But on the electric Mbira, is that am I saying it right?
That's right. You are.
How? What came first? I mean, I'm assuming Uncle Dave Makin'. Everybody knows who your dad is. I'm assuming you were exposed to Uncle Dave Makin's music at an early age. Is that correct?
That is totally correct.
Okay.
So he, in a way, he came first before the Mbira. But I was really little when I heard my dad play his songs. But I didn't know them at the time as Uncle Dave Makin' Songs. Because he would sit in his chair and play, just go from song to song, whatever would come in his head. And decades later now, I brought my kids to visit my parents one day, and he was playing the banjo for them. And I'm in the other room, and I just hear the song, and I yell, you know, what's that? What is that right now that you're playing? And he said, Morning Blues, Uncle Dave Makin'. And it really came back to me that I had remembered being transfixed by the song when I was probably their age. And so the first thing I did, which is the first thing I do normally, is I grab my electric Mbira, as one tends to do, and start play along with what he was doing. And I just instantly thought, I want to put this in my live set and start playing it out, because it just fit perfectly with my own songs. When I did it on the Mbira, it just felt so right. But then my daughter, who at the time was probably 3, became obsessed with Uncle Dave Makin'. And so I bought the Bear Family box set.
Okay.
Which is that German label. You know, it's like, yeah. It's like 12 discs, just insane. And every day we listened to disc 5, because she insisted upon it. We only would listen to disc 5. And I ended up, I just via sitting with it all day, every day, started learning all these tunes. And then, sometime later I thought, shoot, I should record this all. I know now like 12 songs. Let me see what happens if I put a record together.
That's incredible.
So that's basically how it all went down.
So, yeah. So for the real forensic people out there, are all of the songs on your record from disc 5 of the Bear Family box set?
I mean, I say they are, but not really. Most of them are. At least it started that way. And she was right. The other discs, they didn't have. Disc 5 is just really good. All the songs are really, really good. And so I would say like, hey, can we hear like disc 3? We've never even put that we haven't even heard that. And she would say no. And so then I would have to wait till she wasn't around. And then I would put on other ones and I'd be like, oh yeah, she's right. These aren't really doing it for me. But then once I started the project and I involved my friend Raina Gellert on fiddle, she turned out to be an Uncle Dave aficionado and started sending me songs that were not only not on disc five, but I don't think were on the box set at all. So I just kind of broadened my horizons from just that CD.
Amazing. Yeah, Uncle Dave Macon is kind of like the Mississippi Sheiks or Foster Brooks, where it's kind of for grown-ups, but then kids can totally figure it out. It's kind of one of those weird things.
Yeah. Well, I think I think the songs themselves are so catchy and pleasing to listen to that kids, I think the imbira is also a very inclusive sounding instrument. Like the banjo, I don't know, I've thought about this, especially with kids, like imbira, it has a way of just kind of your ear just enjoys what it just, it's nice. And so I think like the way I've presented the songs, anybody can like them, I think, because they're just at their core, they're really good songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
No, and the imbira, I mean, obviously, like the banjo, African roots. Where did the electric imbira come from? Who made it and how long have you had it?
Well, okay. The instrument builder is named Bill Wesley, and his company is called Array Instruments. And he's down in San Diego. And I've had his acoustic versions. I think it was probably like a prototype for maybe 25 years.
Okay.
And I play it all. The whole thing is set up. It's not chromatic or like a piano or something. It goes up in fifths and it goes down in octaves. So it's like this big spread of tines. And it's just very modal. And so it very quickly feels either kind of, it can feel very African or Celtic. It just goes into these modes that hint at some kind of abstract other world thing. And I always, I played it on film scores and records and around the house. But then a few years back, maybe 5 or so years ago, I found out that he had made an electric solid body stereo out, just like the most incredible thing. And then that really changed everything for me, because then I was able to play it live on stage, plug it into a guitar amp, and I started singing and writing my own songs, which I'd never done before. I was always just, you know, like a drummer and accompanist and that kind of guy.
Wow.
So,
Are these expensive?
A few grand.
Okay.
Two, three. It depends on what you go with. I think he has different sizes. I have a very kind of medium, because it's easier to travel with and around town. Not too bulky. I wanted to keep everything very simple. Being a drummer, I was like, didn't want to always be caring. I wanted to be able to just show up and play a show if somebody asked me to, and just not be encumbered by too much size or things. That was one thing I always wanted.
You obviously can play anything percussive, but did the imbira come kind of naturally, or is it a whole different skill set from drumming?
I mean, for me, it was something I've always gravitated towards it, probably because it's percussive. Growing up, when I was really little, I had a little tiny one and played it all the time, just in my room by myself. I don't know who it comes naturally to. I think it's just the whole thing about it is that there's really no wrong notes. And that's a big thing about the guy's theory who made it. Like he wants kids to be able to feel gratified by music right away.
and at a really early age and not struggle. And therefore, it's like in his mind, something, it does something to their brain that paves the way for something later on, you know, like pre-TV, before their minds get cluttered with all this other stuff. If they can have a direct path to being gratified by an instrument quickly, you know, there's like a whole, I mean, it's obvious, and what a great thing.
Yeah.
So really, anybody probably would enjoy playing it. That's what I say.
Yeah. Well, one thing that struck me, not knowing how the sausage gets made, but one thing that struck me when I first heard this record is this instrument is able to sound like when Ruben comes to town, it sounds like a gamelan. But then on other tracks, mm-hmm. it almost sounds like the thing that you would put above your baby's crib and wind it and that kind of ice cream truck sound. Yeah. So is that just totally. Your playing technique, or are there effects and a tonal range through this electric stuff? What's going on there?
You know, each one, I think I just approached each one a little differently with maybe different effects I put it through, or sometimes I would like to put it through an octave thing. So I like to hear it down an octave or up an octave. But yeah, I mean, I love the gamelan. So right there, I'm happy that you even thought of that. That's like my favorite thing. If, you know, I mean, like, I would say that's probably my most favorite thing is gamelan. I'm always thinking gamelan. So, but yeah, the imbira itself is just so trance-like or meditative that it goes in, and something ice cream trucky or something gamelan-ish, those are all very meditative, repetitive, little pattern-like things. And that's, it just depends on how you mess with it. And then you, yeah, but all each track from the record, for the most part, just starts with me putting my fingers on it and starting a thing, and then thinking, which Uncle Dave song will I sing now? And then just going with one.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible because these songs in their original form are amazing, but they're not, as you've somehow used a more obscure instrument to make these songs more approachable, which I don't know how you do it, but.
that's so funny. I've never quite, nobody's phrased it just like that, but that's really true. That's what I was finding about these songs was at their core, they're so enjoyable. And even if I'm changing things around or changing chords here and there or lyrics, like they are so approachable. And I think I also just innately, or I slow everything down maybe a little bit, so you can really let the songs kind of just really sit there and shine, and that there's not too much, you know, hard driving banjo going along with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
As much as I love what Uncle Dave does, obviously, but I just can't do that and wouldn't do that.
I mean, on your end, in your parts, like, are there wrong? You said there's kind of like no wrong notes on this thing, the way he voiced it. Could you kind of just, as long as you're in the rhythm zone, like do any of these songs with any finger pattern?
Not really. I mean, there's the more bluesy ones.
Yeah.
And that tends to lean in that kind of desert blues milieu, or whatever the word is. And then there's the more lullaby-ish ones. I think I probably have like my few things that I do that I slightly alter to do those different kinds, to sort of cover the ground of those different things. I have my little, it's hard to explain because it's kind of, I don't think about it, but it's just where my hands go. It just goes to, there's a few different things it does for these songs.
It's amazing. Everybody's going to want to run out and buy an electric Ambera now. But was there ever a fork in the road where you thought, you know, maybe I'll do some Uncle Dave songs and some other stuff? Or was it just like, this is the vision, it's all Uncle Dave, it's all electric Ambera?
I simultaneously, when I got everybody together, there were other songs of my own that I had everybody play on.
Okay.
But it seemed like a radical enough idea to just go with the Uncle Dave thing and put that out into the world and not like muddy the waters with, well, it's partly Uncle Dave and sort of my thing over here. I mean, so I figured like I did as much as I could in the short windows I had to record, and now I have a head start on a second record, basically.
Wow. Yeah. Was this recorded last year?
You know, I think I'm bad with time anyways, but because of the pandemic, I really cannot fathom how long it's been, but I think this has been done for over a year, and it's kind of was making its way through different people's hands, mm-hmm. Record label wise and otherwise. I think I made this 2 years ago, maybe more. And it took about a year to finish, only because with our two kids and everything, it was hard to, I'm no longer able to, you know, like work all day and into the night and just trip out in the studio, you know, like that kind of thing. So it was very, you know, I'm going to take my daughter to kindergarten and then I'll be back at 10 or 9 and we'll be ready to go. And then when I leave to pick her up, maybe my wife, Juliet, will come in and sing her parts, or my dad will come in and play. Like, it was very, all hands on deck to try and make sure we could do this.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of grandparent action.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Rise on the record, and then who else is on the record? I know you mentioned the fiddle player.
Yeah, Raina Gellert is on fiddle. My wife, Julia Camagere, sings all the harmonies. Via Farcature, Ali Farcature's son, mm-hmm. plays on Oh Love and Babe. He plays on one song. Sam Gendel, who many people will know as this incredible saxophone player. He plays this crazy guitar bass hybrid called it's made by a Swiss guitar builder, something Avalon. I don't know. It's crazy. It has some guitar strings, some bass strings, and a little lever that adds a sub octave, and he plays it like a bass, and it's pretty amazing.
Holy cow.
So he played that. Yeah, it's amazing. It's insane. That, the visual of like the us as a duo where he's playing that and I'm playing the Ambera is so like, is the most muso looking, like, who are these guys?
Each with your own pedal board.
Yeah, it's just, everything's like dark wood but who else played on it? Amir Yagmai, who's this really good friend of mine, bows this Turkish instrument called a Yali Tambur on one song. And the piano player Glenn Pacha, one track is just all him. We were going on tour, my dad and Roseanne Cash were playing these Johnny Cash shows, all Johnny Cash songs, yeah. And Glenn was the piano player on that. And so during sound check, I would go up to him and with my iPad and just say like, Glenn, play something. And then he would do a bunch of cool stuff and like mute the strings with his hand and pluck them. And I just took all this sound check stuff of him and turned that into When the Train Comes Along, which is the last song on the record.
That's all from sound checks in your iPad?
Yes.
Okay. There is a video, a cool video of you with the band in a studio, is that how most of the record came together, or was everyone kind of separate?
That's how most of the record came together. Okay. I had Raina in from Nashville, and my dad and my wife, Juliet and Sam. We were the mostly the core thing. And then there was these kind of ancillary other things that were happening for a few songs.
Wow. I gotta ask, since your daughter was sort of the executive producer of this, what other music is she into?
Well, she it's pretty much, what is it now? There was a very long while where it was just Uncle Dave and the cast recording of with the Wizard of Oz, when my wife in sixth grade played Dorothy for her school.
Okay.
We have a cassette tape of that cast recording. And so it would be basically those two things. Keep Your Skillet Good and Greasy and the Wizard of Oz were the two. No, really nothing else. She has no idea about like what is that going on out there. Like, we've kept her from all of it. she doesn't realize.
Incredible.
Like what's like waiting at the other side of the door, like all the real bad stuff. And, actually, now she likes to listen to The Sound of Music.
Okay.
That's good. That's the third thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're cool for the time being.
And how have you been getting through the pandemic? Are you able to work on new projects?
You know, not really. I just did a session for the first time where I played drums on a song and went into a studio and everybody's wearing masks, and that was new. That was crazy.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I have my little setup. My live rig is set up in my living room and it's all on and ready to go all the time. So if I even get 10 minutes, I'll just go in there and just do something. But I really haven't been, I'd like to work on new music, but it's just hard with all of us kind of jammed up in the house all the time.
Yeah. I'm going to sound like a moron here, but I don't know what your setup is like. I mean, you mentioned gamelan. Do you have a gamelan set somewhere in Southern California?
No.
No, okay.
I wish. No, I mean, it's kind of like, it's just more like it's in my head all the time. That sound and the way they all work together and the low and the high and the whole thing. But I basically just have my Imbira, and then the same guy makes this other thing, which are nails that are set up the same way, like, but hammered in. And instead of plucking them, you just rub the head of the nail and you just get more of like a sound, but it's set up the same way. So I use the both. That's how I do my show. It's like, I'll start something on the nails and then I'll loop that and then go to the Imbira and things like that.
Is there a particular amplifier that works for this kind of stuff better than others?
I mean, anything. I always borrow old guitar amps of my dad that break up just the right way and just mm-hmm. kind of get that good old sound and make the Imbira distorted, which makes it even more beautiful. Anything.
Anything.
Anything that's laying around, I'll put it through and see what it sounds like.
And how many effects do you normally run this thing through?
Well, you know, for my live show, I've kind of stopped messing with anything old. And so the best thing I found is the H9 pedal, the Eventide thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, it'll always, everything is saved and it's never fails me and I never have to worry about anything going wrong. So for my shows, I always just go to that because my least favorite thing in the world is about to play my show and then something goes wrong. That was what my first part of my life was like.
and being like, yeah, let's bring this up in this old cool Fender Rhodes and, you know, like lugging it up onto the stage and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Now I just can't, it's just, I want everything just boom, one plug, everything goes. And then it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And most people who buy a custom guitar, there's some customization there with the Ambira and this guy in San Diego. Is there anything to like tweak to your own personal settings, or is it kind of like you buy it from him? No.
No.
It's fascinating.
Everything. I mean, they're all a little different. I have a few of them and they do sound very different from each other. They're like one maybe is more resonates longer, but that's not always ideal. Like they both have their own sort of personality to them. So I kind of have to like just keep buying them and see what this, like, oh, I'll try this one now.
Incredible.
Yeah.
You have one of the most amazing musical families between your work and your dad's work. What else do you guys jam on when you guys hang out?
What do we jam on? Well, he likes to come over and make these Instagram videos in my bathroom because it's painted red.
And that's where they are. Okay.
I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Have I think I do. Them? Yeah.
Yeah. That's our bathroom.
Okay.
And so he now wants to only make those videos in our red bathroom. So he does like to come over and do a bit of that. What else do we do? I've been having to do some shows here and there, what's it called? XPN, World Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And they make you play live versions of it. So he's come and done that with me. And then he just loves the way our living room sounds. So he likes to come over and just play guitar and just see what comes of it. He keeps saying he doesn't want to record anymore, but then I said, well, what about doing it in my living room? And then he said, well, maybe he'll do that. So,
yeah. Were you, back in the day, were you thinking you were going to do a whole tour around this record?
Yeah, wow. I was thinking that.
That would have been amazing.
I had some good stuff lined up. I was going to go to the Byron Bay Blues Festival in Australia.
Wow.
That was exciting. All these things. Hopefully the lifespan of this record and the record label, like, hopefully there's some combo that's able to extend some kind of interest into the future enough to then parlay it into me going to play shows. You know what I mean? Like, hopefully there's some way to extend to get in when it all comes back, if it does, or however it does. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I see people are booking shows. I don't know what that means or what they're going to go do.
I think it's a lot of wishful thinking.
Is that it? It must be.
I have no answers for you, but I will say this record, as much as it sounds like an odd concept record, like, it is so listenable. I've listened to this record and played it for my family so many times, which is why I finally reached out to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. There's your dad plays banjo on it, but this is an electric Ambira record version. Make no mistake. Yeah, and it's
make
still
no
cool.
mistake, you guys. Don't you listen to this thinking this is some banjo record.
No.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, this would be something that would have we
Yeah. Raina, I had people had their plane tickets.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I had a sound person. I was flying in from New York. I mean, I was like getting to it.
Yeah. Was your dad going to tour as well, or you had a different banjo player?
No, I was going to do it just me, Raina, and then this great bass player named Mark Fain, who I play with. He's from Nashville. We were going to do it as a trio.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But that was, you know, that was then. Now, it's been interesting doing it. The more time that goes by, I keep doing it in different ways. And for each time I have to do a new version of it, like for World Cafe or this WNYC thing, it keeps kind of moving forward. It's like an accelerated, now I'm doing them almost like very differently. And so now it's like the sound is changing. Now I'm thinking like, well, now what am I doing? Normally that would be on the road. I don't know. I'm actually not sure what I'm saying right now, but.
No, I mean, the songs are evolving, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. So now I might want to, in a year from now, if I get to tour, I don't know what it'll be. I also might have a new record. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's fine. Join the company. Yeah, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself becoming sort of like a Uncle Dave Macon historian? Did you dive into that world, or was it more just like these songs from this disc five all speak to me? I'm going to cover them.
Yeah, it was that. It was the latter. I mean, I don't know much about, you know, there's like the kind of people who know who played on everything. And
oh yeah.
I've never been like that. And I'm kind of like intimidated by those kinds of people. So I just came at this from more of just like an emotional sort of feeling place.
Yeah.
But then I started looking into a few things about him that I thought was interesting, because I was changing lyrics here and there and making my own. I would maybe keep his chorus on a song and then tell a whole new story, or keep his first verse and then go off on a different kind of veer off to the left. And then when the record was done, some people that heard it, they said, you know, that's kind of what he was doing, because he was taking music from all over the place, minstrel music, blues, medicine show, kind of almost like comedy, stuff that was really popular in the late 1800s. And then he would take lines from here and there and kind of put it all together for a whole new crowd when he was in his 50s. That's when he really got famous. So in a way, I thought that was interesting, because I was doing that with his songs just instinctually. And then I find that that's kind of how he did his songs in the first place.
Yeah.
So that kind of interested me. He's like a collector of music as well as a player.
Yeah. I was going to say, because, you know, I imagine singing some of these songs verbatim would have led to some cringeworthy moments, either because it just didn't hold up or it felt inauthentic for you to be singing it. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the things I wasn't sure what he was talking about. And sometimes that was fine. And, you know, like Ruben Comes to Town.
Yeah.
My daughter loves that one too. And it would say like, Ruben was an all around man. Whenever he came to town, the only thing about Ruben was he would let his socks roll down. And so my daughter just was like, what? What does that mean? And then, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And I was like, I actually have no idea. And then, so she said, well, let's call Grandpa Yai. So then we're like, all right, let's call up Yai. And so we call up my dad and say, Uncle Dave says Ruben
we can't tell if it's wood or wooden, let his socks roll down. What's the deal with that? And he said, oh, Reuben would let his socks roll down. It means he's like unkempt and he's messy. That's the only problem with him or something. And then we're like, all right, there you go. That answers that question.
This has to bring so much delight to your dad that this fountain of knowledge he's amassed over the decades, he can finally help demystify things.
I know. And it's his granddaughter asking to clarify this like super esoteric, you know, 1800s language. But then sometimes I would just start telling a new story, like one maybe about my daughter when we rode a steam train in Northern California, and I'd be like, I'm just going to take out his verse and just do my own little story right here for a second. And cause it, a lot of his things are just like these little stanzas that don't always necessarily fit. They don't always fit together.
Yeah.
So you can kind of just put in your own little bits here and there.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This record is so cool. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
I'm glad to talk to you about it and hear how it was made. And now I and probably thousands of other people are going to Google this guy and figure out what an electric Embera looks like.
Yeah, you can see it.
All right, that was my conversation with Joaquin Cooter. Again, if anybody out there is into what we are about, please subscribe to the Fretboard Journal magazine. It would mean the world to me. And if you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts and share it with your friends.